This is Digital Story Podcast number 1056, June 16th, 2026. Today's theme is Nighttime is the Right Time for Smartphone Photography. I'm Derek Story. Smartphones are good at lots of things, and they are really good at night photography. And when you want to escape the hot, contrasty glare of summer days, let the evening roll in, grab your phone, and go make some stunning pictures. I'll share my favorite tips for just that on today's TVS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. I think we sometimes forget how good our smartphones are for night photography, low light photography. But remember, there was a time, it wasn't that long ago, when that was one of the defining moments for smartphones. Like, ooh, a Google Pixel does a really good job with night photography. iPhone's not as good. Oh my gosh, Samsung's, yes. You know, and there was like this competition. It was like the megapixel wars for smartphones, only it was with nighttime photography. Now we're at the point where they're all doing very well. In fact, amazing. And it's a combination of computational photography, image stabilization, and lots of secret sauce. So I thought what I'd do is get this back on your radar. I mean, this time of year in North America, when it's starting to heat up or the weather is just not comfortable during midday, the sun is high, and it's not very inspiring for going out and taking pictures. However, if you want to do some stunning work, just wait for the sun to go down. Tap your iPhone or your smartphone that you happen to have and go make some shots. And the other thing I want to point out is that when you're on the road, let's say you're on a family vacation, a business trip, a workshop, whatever it happens to be where you're going to be putting together a collection of images, adding some nighttime shots, mixing those in there with everything that you do will really spice up your overall presentation. It's the kind of thing where people are going, oh, that's a pretty mountain. Oh, that's a lovely goat. Wow, what is that? You go, oh, well, that is Vancouver at night. And they go, man, that looks really great. So nighttime photography can be one of those things that really grab people's attention and then hopefully hold it while you show them the rest of the shots in the series. So let's talk a little bit about what it is, and then I'll share some tips to get the most out of your smartphone. I'm going to be talking about the iPhone because it's the one I'm most familiar with. It's the one I can test. However, as I mentioned earlier, all smartphones do a very good job and they have similar capabilities, and you just have to find the comparable settings on your particular smartphone. So on an iPhone, night mode now, these days, automatically turns on when the camera detects a low light environment. There's a little night mode icon at the top of the display. It turns yellow when the feature is active. And depending on how dark the scene is, your phone might take a night mode photo quickly, or it could take several seconds. If it's taking several seconds, you'll actually see the countdown at the top of the interface, right? It'll count it down for you. As you can imagine, if it's counting down, you should be holding that phone really steady, but we'll get into that in a few moments. Now, the way they do this, the way they produce those amazing pictures in low light environments, is that they use a combination of computational photography and image stabilization to create that single image in low light conditions. But it's not a single exposure. The camera takes multiple frames at different exposures and then fuses them together using software, and this removes noise, brightens shadows, and preserves colors. And it's really quite stunning when you see the difference. Let's say that you take a nighttime theme mode with a film camera, single exposure, whatever the dynamic range happens to be for the film that's in there, all that kind of stuff. And then you do one with your iPhone, and then you compare the two. You're just going to go, oh my gosh, it's crazy. But then in the middle of that, then there would be a single frame with a mirrorless camera. Now, depending on the camera, because we have some crazy mirrorless cameras these days as well that have a dynamic range that'll just blow your mind, thinking of the Sony Alpha series for one thing. So you could get some amazing shots with a single frame on some mirrorless cameras. However, there are some disadvantages to carrying that camera around versus a smartphone, especially in urban settings. Talk a little bit more about that as well. Basically, the way the process works on a smartphone is it uses frame stacking and alignment. The camera captures a series of short to long exposures over a few seconds. The main reference frame freezes motion, while the other longer exposures capture color and detail. Then the phone's image processor aligns these frames to fix blur caused by your shaky hands, maybe, then merges them into a single image. And that single image usually looks quite good. If you look at the XF data for a night mode shot, and I'm talking about something that has very good XF data readouts, such as Nitro, that has everything that you'd want to know, and that's what I used for analyzing my night mode shots, you'll see that it's listed in the XF data as a composite image, no less than 10 frames. You can also see in the XF data the individual composite image exposure times. It's sort of fun to see how the phone is capturing da-da-da-da-da at all these different exposures. You know, it has it all figured out exactly what it needs for the dynamic range it wants to produce. And then it takes the best of them, merges them together, and gives you that single shot. And as you know, it all happens very quickly, very quickly. And in fact, it's really cool to look at extensive XF data for iPhone shots, because it just goes on and on and on. There's all these categories and all these different things. And you go, my gosh, all of this happens when I tap the shutter button on the screen of the iPhone. And it all happens in the blink of an eye. So now let's get into some tips and techniques. I want to start with just a few things as a reminder for setting up your iPhone. One thing that I like to do is go into the settings and then go to camera and go to prioritize faster shooting and toggle it off, because we want the best image quality possible. So we don't want fast shooting speed. We want the best image quality. So I go ahead and toggle that off, prioritize faster shooting, turn it off. The second thing is sort of learn how to work the night mode icon at the top of the screen. As I said earlier, when you're in a low light situation, the phone will automatically switch to night mode. But if you long press on that highlighted icon, that little moon icon, if you long press on it, then you have a few options. And the main option is turning on night mode max. And you'll see it there in the little pop-up screen. If you do that, that allows for longer exposures. It can be up to 30 seconds, depending on how steady the camera is. And the iPhone is monitoring that, the steadiness of the camera. So you're not going to get 30 seconds, obviously, if you're hand-holding it. But if you put the iPhone on a tripod, you could. Now, there is one trade-off I want to mention right now, that regardless of which iPhone, the most sophisticated, say you have an iPhone 17 Pro Max, when you go to night mode, you'll get a 12 megapixel image. And the iPhone has to do that to allow for all the other things that it's doing. So your image resolution is going to drop to 12 megapixels. That's not that big a deal. 12 megapixels is a lot of resolution, and it's what we used to shoot with all the time anyway on these devices. But in night mode, you are going to drop to 12 megapixels. I have a few night mode techniques. And a lot of these are going to be very, you go, yeah, I know, I already know that. But let's go over them anyway. So you want to keep your hands as steady as possible. This is like widening your stance a bit, using two hands to grip the phone, and then bring it close to your body, like lock your elbows, you know, onto your body, and just get as steady as you can. The more steady you are, the more opportunity the iPhone has to give you maybe a little bit longer exposure, get a little more detail, all that kind of stuff. So steady as possible is key. You can also do things like brace your body against a solid surface. So you're holding it steady, lean against the wall, lightly tap the shutter icon on the iPhone screen. Gently press, gently tap. The other thing I suggest is taking multiple photos instead of just one, because chances are that one of those shots, let's say you take three, let's say it's a scene that you really want, and you do three shots, chances are one of those is probably going to be a tad better than the other two, and you're just increasing your odds of getting the shot that you want if you take more than one. So take one, two, three, four shots, somewhere in there, to make sure that you get the shot you want. You can always delete the other ones if you decide you don't want the repetition in your photos library. Generally speaking, the best camera to use on multiple camera iPhones is the main camera, the 1X, because of its fast aperture. It just gives you the best odds of getting a nice, clean, bright shot. And then finally, using RAW plus night mode, you can do that, and then that gives you maximum editability for those images. So if you switch to Pro RAW, go to night mode, do maximum night mode, keep that camera super steady, wow, you can really get a lot of detail, a lot of information in that shot that allows you to do all sorts of things in post-production to make it even look better. It's going to look good on your iPhone screen right after you take it, but then you can play with it more. So RAW mode plus night mode, a very good combination. One of the great things about nighttime photography with a smartphone is that you don't attract a lot of attention to yourself like you would if you were using a larger mirrorless camera or a DSLR or something on a tripod. You can go about your business, you're unnoticed, you're unbothered, and you can still come away with stunning shots. Everyone's got their phones out all the time. You're just going to blend in with the crowd. No one's going to bother you. If you are in a situation where you do feel comfortable setting up a tripod, then shooting RAW with night mode max, you might get exposures up to 30 seconds with incredible detail and color. And you can trip the shutter, you know, with an Apple Watch if you have one, or you can set the self timer, something to really maximize the steadiness of the phone during exposure. Nighttime photography is a great way to separate your images from everyday snapshots. So whether you're exploring new territory on vacation, or you just feel like getting out in your hometown stomping grounds and producing something new, these techniques will render your world in a whole different light. I have some camera industry news for you. Since we're talking about iPhones and stuff, and WWDC just happened, we're now getting some more information about stuff that wasn't really covered in the keynote. And this one article on Petapixel, Apple's RAW processing is finally evolving after a decade, and it's a big deal. And I have a link to this article in the show notes. Although Apple's WWDC keynote gets by far the most attention, the event is a treasure trove of new info for developers across the entire Apple ecosystem. Buried among literally over 100 new videos Apple posted to its developer YouTube channel this week is one about a significant upgrade to the company's core image RAW processing APIs that power RAW and ProRAW capture on iPhone and RAW image processing across all of Apple's platforms. As Apple core image engineer David Hayward explains, the brand new version 9 of core image RAW processing and the accompanying CRRAW filter API lets users process RAW photos with significantly improved image quality, including better sharpness, color, and noise reduction. There are also major raw image quality improvements coming to iOS 27, iPad OS 27, Vision OS 27, and Mac OS 27. While some of Hayward's presentation is geared specifically toward developers, and there are a lot of nitty-gritty technical details in the video above, they have a link to that video. It contains a lot of exciting news for photographers inside the Apple ecosystem, including those who capture raw photos on iPhone and edit raw images from other cameras on iPad or Mac. As Hayward explains, raw photos from every camera require special handling before they can be displayed or edited. The initial raw data parsing and demosaicing process is integral to all raw processing software, and that the raw image sensor data has to be interpreted by software before it can be viewed or processed. This is an essential function of Apple's core image raw processing engine. There is a significant amount of engineering behind the scenes to turn a raw file into a useful visible file in addition to demosaicing. There is noise reduction, color correction, lens corrections, and other image processing that tweaks micro contrast, tone curves, and more. Precisely how all of this works and what changes are made relate to the technical and artistic decisions made by developers, whether at Apple, Adobe, Capture One, DxO, etc. The software side of raw photography is not given nearly the attention it deserves. It is impossible to overstate just how important the underlying processing technology is when working with raw photographs. In Apple's case, the company promises that version 9 of Core Image Raw Processing will deliver better-looking raw photos across the board, no matter which Apple product the user has. The algorithmic steps for interpreting raw image data are the same on iPhone, iPad, and Mac. The raw APIs are used by Photos, Pixelmator Pro, and other third-party apps. While Petapixel has previously discussed Apple's occasionally slow support for new raw images, formats, and cameras, the company touts that it supports 784 different cameras as of now and is always working on new support. Hopefully, with the arrival of RAW 9, Apple's support will get even better. The first major version update for Core Image RAW since RAW 8 arrived in 2017. RAW 8 arrived in 2017. I just wanted to say that again. Hayward calls this the biggest update yet. And there's a graph here with a timeline. RAW 1 and 2 with 26 models came out in 2006. RAW 3, 2008. RAW 4, 2010. RAW 5, 2012, RAW 6, 2014, RAW 7, 2016, RAW 8 in 2018, and then nothing for all those years until RAW 9, which will be released later this year, 2026. No wonder it's a big update. It's been a heck of a long time. All right, just a couple more paragraphs here. RAW version 9 is a major improvement for raw image processing. A big part of that is the demosaic and denoise processes happen simultaneously with the new Core ML model. Traditionally, demosaicing and denoising are performed at different steps, which can degrade overall image quality and rendering. This is something DxO specifically overcomes through its Deep Prime 3 technology, which also performs demosaic and denoise in a single step. Apple says it leverages the neural cores in its Apple A and Apple M series silicon chips to run all its new raw processing models directly on device. It is more resource intensive than prior versions, which developers will need to consider when implementing it in their photo editing software. However, in exchange for this more demanding RAW 9 technology, the quality improvements are massive. Consider the examples below that Apple shared, which even include a non-traditional X-Trans sensor in the Fujifilm X-T5. The quality leap from RAW 8 to RAW 9 is substantial and extremely impressive. So this is another reason why you might want to come over to the article, because there are lots of image examples here supporting what they're talking about. And I'm looking at, let's say, a Sony A7 II. The difference between 8 and 9, substantial. A Canon 5D Mark III comparison. Wow. Fujifilm X-T5 comparison. Yeah, it is crazy, the difference here between raw processor 8 and 9. All right, last paragraph. This is great news for those who shoot RAW files on iPhone or edit RAW photos inside the Photos app, Pixelmator Pro, or any third-party app that relies on Apple Core Image RAW engine. Next, it will be important for Apple to continually expand its support for the different types of RAW files, which have previously been somewhat of a bottleneck for the company's native photo editing applications. And that's the thing that we're going to be keeping an eye on. I love the fact that this software is coming out and the differences are just crazy good, but it doesn't help us as much as it could if there is this big delay from the time we get a new camera until we can use the workflow that we want for our new camera. And an example for me is going to be, I have the Panasonic L10 that'll be coming later this month. I would love to use my existing workflow for that camera. Interesting stuff coming out of WWDC. This applies directly to many of us, and I'm happy to see it. Here's an article on amateurphotographer.com, link in the show notes. Sales of full-frame mirrorless cameras are flatlining while compact camera sales continue to grow. What's going on? It's crazy, huh? Isn't it? I mean, I have an article out right now that published on LiveView, and is talking about why I decided to buy the Panasonic Lumix L10. And one of the things I talk about is that the camera industry reminds me sometimes of the fashion industry. How, you know, like now it's thin ties, now it's fat ties, now it's wide lapels, now it's narrow lapels, you know, all that kind of stuff, and how it just keeps shifting around. I feel like that happens in the camera industry as well. Let's see what they have to say about this compact camera stuff. Recent figures from camera industry watcher CIPA in Japan reflect what we've been conscious of for a while, namely that shipments of fixed lens compact cameras continue to rise 30% year on year, a growth rate that surpasses all other camera categories. While the DSLR segment continues its drawn-out decline, with shipments down 30% compared to last year. Neither of those are particularly surprising bits of info, as, unlike most major manufacturers want to acknowledge, it appears interest in compact camera now goes beyond what they might have once dismissed as a blip, or indeed a short-lived trend hyped up by social media influencers. But I think it's more than that. I do. But what is more unexpected news is the potential slowdown, in fact, a modest 2.6% fall expected by CIPA across the whole 2026 when it comes to mirrorless cameras. That equates to CIPA predicting 6.82 million camera bodies will ship in the current year compared with 7 million units in 2025. While mirrorless cameras are still outselling fixed-lens compacts, the gap between them appears to be narrowing. The industry guru expects we'll see 2.77 million fixed-lens compact cameras ship this year. This change is hitting full-frame cameras the hardest. And they're saying here that the mirrorless category that seems to be hardest hit is the higher-end, large-format, full-frame cameras. CIPA reports shipments are down just over 11% for the first 4 months of 2026 compared to the same period last year. And then they go on a little bit about why they think that is happening. But basically, I think tastes are shifting a little bit again, and that traveling lighter. I think the compact cameras that we have available to us now and the ones that are coming down the pike are more sophisticated than what we've had in the past. We can get better image quality out of them than we could before. And if you can get image quality that you want with the features that you like in something that is smaller and lighter, A lot of photographers are interested in that. Last paragraph here. Overall, though, total camera shipments when all categories are combined are expected to match that of 2025, with a dip in February this year for interchangeable lens cameras, balanced by a rise this April. I hope we see further interesting products from both major players and similar licensees alike to stimulate photography market further before the year is out. Well, I can say that personally, I am supporting the data. The only camera I'll be buying, probably, most likely, in 2026, the only new camera, I should say, will be that compact camera. And it's what I need, right? I'm fine in full frame. I'm fine in my Micro Four Thirds interchangeable with OM system. Everything's looking good everywhere else. But I have that one thing that I need, and a good full-featured compact camera is it, and I can't wait to get my hands on it. Let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. The 2026 photography workshop season. We're still alive and well. I know a lot of stuff is sold out. I know when you go to the workshop page, you see a lot of sold outs, but we have two online workshops that are still open, and they're later this year. Of course, the first one is the Lightroom Power Tools online workshop that will be led by Rob, September 9, 16, 23, and 30. This is your chance to really learn the Develop module in Lightroom Classic, and Rob will show you all the tricks, and you'll go, man, I wish I would have known this long time ago. And then in November, we're going to have an online printing class. This is a class I've run many times, this workshop. And the thinking for having it in November is that if you want to produce some stuff for the holidays, whether it be fine art cards or prints as gifts, you know, you can put them in a frame and just look, wow. People go, man, you are an artist, aren't you? I was thinking that November would be a great time to really, you know, have a full head of steam with your inkjet printer. So both of those are available now. I have links in the show notes, or you can go to thenimblephotographer.com or go to thedigitalstory.com and click on workshops. I want to give a shout out to our Inner Circle members. You know, last week's podcast was because of them. They were the ones that provided the data that I needed to talk about the balance of capture and post-processing. It's so wonderful having great photographers, really skilled photographers, who know what's going on as a resource when we want to talk about things in our photography world. Things such as capture versus post-processing, things such as gear, things such as, you know, it could be anything. As you know, there's a million topics in the world of photography. And if you're an Inner Circle member, you have access to this group 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that is really cool. If you're thinking about doing something and you want an opinion about it, someone's probably already done it or bought it or tested it. And then they will share their opinion with you, and then other people can chime in and have conversations. It's a great community. I totally love surfing the conversations and seeing the pictures they produce. We have the photo assignment every month, which is also a wonderful joy. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, all you have to do is tap on the Patreon icon that's on every page of the Digital Story. You can sign up there. Either Inner Circle or Inner Circle Bold. Inner Circle Bold members get a free online workshop in 2027, free webinars in 2027, and a few other perks as well. Regardless of which level you are, if you're in the Inner Circle, you are one of my favorite photographers on the planet. Thank you so much for supporting this community month in and month out. And finally, a shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. These are the folks that provide the knowledge, the paper, the reviews, just about anything that you want related to inkjet printing. And they can also help you decide what type of paper to use. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest questions. When you have this vast variety of paper surfaces and you have a specific type of photography that you want to print, they can help you match the right paper to the subject that you want to print to give you optimal results for your work. All this information is on the Red River Paper site. You can click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story, nose around a bit, get the paper that you want, get a sample pack if you're debating between a number of different surfaces, do some testing, dial it in, and then make some dynamite prints or fine art cards. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more terrific stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.